This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Baseball actually happened this weekend. Welcome back to the latest edition of the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. Episode 27, in an episode in which we actually get to talk about the Texas baseball team playing in some games that matter. That's right, the first weekend of the college baseball season is in the books. I think everybody was pretty much in action across the country. I know the entire Big 12 was in action, and of course Texas was on the road at Louisiana. We will get into all of that because I think there's a lot to take away from what turned out to be a road series win for Texas to begin the season. They won in extra innings 3-1 on Friday. They held on to win 6-5 on Saturday and then came up short on Sunday 8-5. All of those games kind of interesting in their own ways, but I mean, we'll just start with the general. I think the main takeaway from that series victory for Texas is the fact that it's a positive. It's a positive result to begin the season, especially when you consider how many young guys made their Texas debut. And that list goes beyond just true freshmen. Cole Quintanilla, a redshirt freshman, pitched some very important innings on Saturday and pitched effectively. So a lot of new faces all over the place, not only made debuts, but in a lot of cases made their mark in some ways as well, some guys more than other. But that's going to be one of the tougher road atmospheres that Texas plays in this season. I mean, the people down there in Lafayette really love their baseball. They've got a good culture down there in terms of following of the program and getting talent on campus and producing quality teams in that league and being capable of making the NCAA tournament every season. But the turnouts were all great as expected. I mean, they packed the people into a really nice facility and they have people outside of the facility as well. And, you know, in South Louisiana, they definitely like to party. And as you can probably hear in the background, my dog's way of partying is finding his one monkey toy in the box in my office that makes noise in making his way onto the podcast. So shout out to my dog, Willie. You're going to have to be... he knows I'm in my office, he will just sit outside my door and make noises until I let him in. And then just when you think that he's calmed down, I mean, he's a 12-pound Shih Tzu, he's not a big dog. When you think he's calmed down, he will find something in his toy box that makes noise. Like, just when you think you can be in the clear with a podcast, there goes the old monkey toy that makes noise. But anyway, the atmosphere down there in Lafayette was as expected. I mean, I watched the game on ESPN Plus on Friday, and then most of the games on Saturday and Sunday. And you know, each time they went to the crowd, especially that Friday broadcast when things really got dicey for Texas late in the game, they almost blew that lead. You could just see everybody on their feet and just very loud and energetic and into the game. So I think the underrated aspect about this weekend is it wasn't just an opportunity for a lot of young players to make their debuts and get that out of the way, any sort of maybe jitters that they would have, but they played in a tough environment. I would put that environment up against anything Texas sees on the road this season. I mean, TCU, Texas Tech, any of them. I mean, it's up there as good of any Big 12 atmosphere that there is. So that's an underrated aspect of the weekend. Again, some of those guys had more of a debut than others. Some of them had more success than others. You can go down the list. Both good and bad. And I think going back to that Friday game, I was really impressed with just the way Mason Bryant handled that 10th inning. He was a guy that David Pierce mentioned as being a candidate to be that stopper role that they have. They don't call it a closer, they call it a stopper because they prefer to use those guys in you know, situations that often extend beyond the 9th inning. You know, let's say that there was a huge situation in the 7th inning. You know, they don't want to be limited to using that guy in only safe situations. So He came out and only gave up a hit, but he struck out three guys, three strikes, executed his pitches at one point. The coaching staff for Louisiana tried to argue some sort of play and really delayed things for a while. I mean, that could have been something that could have thrown any pitcher out of rhythm, but it didn't bother Bryant at all. He looked really, really locked in. And people forget this, he was a big-time high school football player at McCallum, too. So he's got to kind of get that football competitive vibe when he's on the mound. But I thought he was really, really impressive to earn that save in that game, game one. But really, the story of game one and the story of, you know, one of the biggest stories of the weekend for Texas was Bryce Elder. I think that, you know, we talked about it on the last couple editions of the podcast, him being named the opening day starter. And I think it surprised a lot of people. Didn't really surprise David Pierce. But Elder went out and did exactly what he's done. He did in the preseason during the fall and also, the preseason and the fall, both those separate, you know, sets of practices and scrimmages and things like that. Of course, his fall was cut short a little bit when he took a ball off the thumb, which if you watched him pitch on Friday, he tries to grab every comebacker with his bare hand and did it a couple of times. Luckily, they were soft. They're going to have to tell him to chill out with that. Use your glove, because that's basically what ended his fall. But he was sensational. He carried a 1-0 lead into the ninth inning and was under 100 pitches before he gave up a leadoff single, which eventually brought David Pierce out to go to the bullpen. And there's Elder on the mound making a passionate case to stay in the game. And I didn't know that he had that kind of competitiveness in him. I knew that he was a very even-keeled guy on the mound when he was a freshman, from the sense that things didn't rattle him. He was just going to get on the mound and try to throw strikes and attack guys. So I knew he wouldn't be rattled by that moment or that environment, in any situation that he was in. But he showed a lot of emotion on the mound as he really got in the groove and just started attacking guys and generating strikeouts. I mean, just the way he carried himself and the bounce that he had in his step was like he was an All-American out there. Like, he had been a terrific starter for 2 years in a row, and this was just, you know, another day on the mound for him. And I remember one point at the beginning of the eighth inning, he's waiting for the umpires to get the game going. I don't know if they delayed it for some sort of commercial deal, whatever, because I know the game was on Cox Sports in addition to ESPN+. So I don't know if that was the holdup. That's often what happens at Texas games with LHN and stuff like that. But he's standing on the mound, like, asking the ump what's going on. Like, why can't we start the inning? I mean, he's got his glove up. He's got the ball. He's ready to go at these guys. And then he went through that eighth inning like it was a breeze. And I just hadn't seen much of that side of him. I knew that the mental makeup was going to be a strength of his presence on the mound. But I didn't know that he had that kind of, you know, fiery competitiveness to him. But he was terrific. I mean, even the eighth inning, he's commanding two-seam fastballs, inner half to righties, and then going away with the cutter or spinning a really good hook where he wanted to, especially when he's ahead in count. He threw a ton of strikes. I think he threw something like 98 pitches, and I think 71 of them were strikes. I mean, that's an incredible percentage, and he's throwing, you know, he threw mostly cutters, curves, and fastballs. He threw some changeups as well. Not as many big left-handed bats in that Louisiana lineup. So the cutter and curve were definitely a big part of his arsenal, as was the fastball. But he commanded all his pitches. He threw all his pitches for a strike. And he looked every bit of a future, no doubt, Friday night starter, a guy that really could end up being one of the better Big 12 pitchers this season. And, you know, that might seem like hyperbole for one start, and we'll have to see what he does against better lineups. That Louisiana team is good. He will definitely see better lineups this season, a season that's going to include starts against a lot of really, really good teams, both in non-conference and conference play. So we'll have to see how he responds against better competition. But the command was there. The stuff was there. I mean, his curveball was so good at times it buckled hitters and even buckled Michael McCann on occasion behind the plate. We know the cutter is for real. That's been for real since he showed up. So that was, you know, one of the big stories of the weekend was the fact that not only did Bryce Elder excel in his first, you know, start as a Friday night guy, he looked like a no doubt ace of a future college staff. And that could be an enormous lift for Texas because they don't really have another one of those guys. And that became clear in Saturday's game when Blair Henley, who, you know, if you've listened to this, to the Extra Bases podcast a bunch on theyak.com, I've had my concerns about what kind of pitcher he would be this year. And this has kind of been his scouting report at Texas, is the results have never really matched with the stuff. And I know he had a decent ERA last year, but if you look at, you know, if you go a little deeper statistically, it wasn't as strong of a season as the ERA. Just he's always a guy that seems to just leave you wanting more when he's on the mound. And Texas handed him a 5-0 lead in that Saturday game, and he almost gave it right back. He gave up 4 runs to a, you know, average to above average lineup, and ended up not even getting into the third inning. And I think that also speaks to David Pierce's frustration with Henley, not even allowing him to stay on the mound with a 5-4 lead in the third inning. And it also speaks to what we've talked about a lot with their pitching plan, is they're going to be aggressive. They're going to try to use their depth to their advantage, and they're not going to allow guys to just go out there and really not generate results. If you're not generating results and you're giving up a bunch of runs and you're not executing your pitchers, you're not going to be out there that long. And that was the story of Blair Henley on Saturday. And I think that's a real concern for Texas moving forward, because that's your most experienced returning pitcher, really, especially starting pitcher, a guy that you should be able to count on in his junior season. And it just wasn't really that great in the preseason, wasn't really that great in the fall. I don't know. I just think that Texas might have a bit of a revolving door when it comes to those rotation spots beyond Blair Henley. Again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. We are up to episode 27, just going back through the main takeaways from Texas's series win on the road at Louisiana this weekend. You know, going back to that Friday night game, I mentioned Elder and I mentioned Bryant. Cam Field struggled to throw strikes. I mean, he was the guy that got the first look in that stopper situation. Brandon Iving looked like the left-handed specialist that Texas desperately needs. You know, he was a little lucky, and sometimes the guys barreled some balls right at some outfielders. But when he came in the game, he threw strikes. And sometimes that's enough against collegiate hitters when it's a left-on-left matchup. So he ended up getting the win, just of throwing to one batter in that Friday night game. Austin Todd had the big moment in the top of the 10th inning with a 2-out, 2-RBI double into the left center gap. He swung the bat really, really well all weekend. I thought heading into this year that he had a real chance to be Texas' best hitter if he could stay healthy. And so far, he definitely looks like he's going to compete for that honor if everything's right. And the bat speed looked good. The confidence looked great. The approach looked good. I mean, he was really making hard contact at a consistent rate, and looked like he's somebody that David Pierce is going to be able to pencil in at the 3 spot pretty much every game this season. So he had the big knock late. Duke Ellis started in the Friday game and carried it throughout the weekend. He was an on-base machine at the top of the order. He had 7 walks as a leadoff guy this in 3 games for Texas. That's outstanding. And he also had 3 hits as well. That's the kind of confident, competitive, selective approach that Texas needs at the top of the lineup. And he looked like a guy that's ready to be the leadoff guy. So, you know, he had a strong Friday game, but Todd came through with a big hit to help Elder. And then and Bryant ended up picking everybody up at the end there and closing out that game with 3 strikeouts, giving up just a hit in a scoreless frame in Texas. Texas did Friday what turned out to be a theme throughout the entire weekend, which I think is the most important thing to take away from all of this, is last year's group really made a habit of responding and being resilient and just finding ways to make things happen in the face of adversity. And this Texas team did that again all weekend at Louisiana. You know, they watched a 1-0 lead slip away in the 9th inning with everybody going nuts at Louisiana. They come right back the next inning, make things happen. Austin Todd, big knock, get a 3-1 lead, and then win the game. Saturday's game, they put up a five spot early in the game, really capitalized on a couple of Louisiana miscues, put the ball in play hard a lot. Louisiana comes right back with four runs. What does the Texas bullpen do? It finishes the game with seven innings and gave up just one earned run in a 6-5 win. I mean, that was a big-time quality response. And even in Sunday's game, which ended up being a loss because, you know, young pitchers learned a lesson that it won't be the last time this sort of thing presents itself in a negative way, because this is going to be life with inexperienced pitchers at times. And Texas walked a ton of guys in that Sunday game. They didn't have any strikeouts until Mateo Boeke pitched the final three innings of that game, and he registered a couple of strikeouts. But Jack Neely really struggled and didn't even record an out in his appearance. Coy Cobb got the start, was basically just a fastball only pitcher. Couldn't command his changeup and slider enough for those pitches to be effective. And, you know, he didn't last very long in his start. Struggled to throw strikes as well. So the Texas staff really put its team in a hole just by the inability to not throw strikes, or the inability to throw strikes, excuse me. But even down 8-1, Texas responded to make it a game. They have a rally. Again, Louisiana had, on two separate occasions, gave Texas a little league homer with a single and a three-base error. It was Bryce Regan in the first game. I think he hit it to center field. I think it was Lance Ford in the Sunday game. But, yeah, just inexplicable errors by the Louisiana outfield just to gift Texas runs. But, you know, they'll take it. So Texas starts clawing its way back, and then Pierce calls on Eric Kennedy off the bench to pinch hit, and he hits a three-run homer to the opposite field, and suddenly Texas was in the game at 8-5. They actually had the game 8-6 with two outs in the ninth inning with the bases loaded, and Pierce called on Tate Shaw to pinch hit for Michael McCann, and Shaw ended up going down looking to end the game. So Texas was just a base hit away from tying that game and forcing extra innings despite being down 8-1. In that game for pretty much the entire game. And that just, you know, Pierce has spoken a lot about this team's character and how much he likes it. And that's what we saw this weekend, was a lot of character, a lot of fight, a lot of passion for results and what was going on. And while this team is a definite work in progress, make no mistake about it, they got a long, long way to go. But if there are early signs of that sort of competitiveness that can really help shape the course of what a season looks like, and really help Texas go from a team last year that was 9-9 to Big 12 champion and eventual team that participated in the College World Series. So I think that's the most important takeaway for Texas from those three games at Louisiana, is we saw the same type of mental makeup and competitiveness that made last year's team such a successful team, a team that really exceeded expectations when you looked at the talent level. So again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. We're up to episode 27, which actually includes some discussion about actual Texas baseball games. We do have some results in the book to talk about. Just going through with some of my main takeaways and observations from this past weekend's three games at Louisiana. Texas came away with the series win, winning two out of the three games. They won 3-1. In Friday night's 10-inning game, they won 6-5 in the Saturday game, and then they lost Sunday's game 8-6. So I mentioned a lot of those young players making debuts. I mentioned Kennedy. I thought his at-bats were way better than his average. I think he only hit 182 over the weekend, but he walked twice, didn't strike out, and he had that pinch-hit three-run homer to the opposite field. I think that he looks like a special hitter potentially. Just his plate coverage, his approach, his strength in the box, how quick he runs. I mean, he was robbed of an infield single in the first inning of Friday's game. He clearly beat off the throw. I don't know what the umpire was looking at. But he looks like, you know, hand-eye coordination. He looks like he could develop into a really special hitter at this level. I think that he's going to be the everyday Friday guy. He came off the bench in that Sunday game because, Pierce was getting some more right-handed bats in there against a left-handed starter. Cam Fields actually got to start out in left field before Kennedy came in the game. But Kennedy looks like he's got the potential to be really, really high-level collegiate hitter. And Lance Ford, it'll be interesting to see what happens at second base, because Mason Hibler really struggled over the weekend. He started to kind of regain some form later in the weekend, but he struck out five times, didn't record a hit. He really looked overmatched at times, especially in the Friday game, even against a lefty. And, you know, meanwhile, Lance Ford finished 3-for-5 with a walk, two runs, an RBI, and a double. I mean, he came off the bench on two separate occasions with really, really good at-bats. He's just got a gamer-like mentality to him. You know, I think if you go watch Texas practice, if you spent an entire week watching Texas practice, you might notice him some, but, you know, he probably wouldn't stand out as a star. But, you know, there's something about him when he gets in game-like situations, he just produces. And I wonder if he's getting closer to forcing his way into the lineup on a more consistent occasion, because, you know, Hibbler's a senior. He's one of their leaders. I mean, Pierce even said it before the season began. He loves that he's one of those guys that will hold other people accountable. But at the end of the day, the results speak the loudest. And if you've got a guy that's scuffling in the box and you got a guy behind him that's on fire, I mean, it's tough to keep that type of bat on the bench. So again, it's very, very, very early. Like anything I say on this podcast, keep in mind that we're talking about three games. Although we can gain some valuable information from those three games, it's still three games in a season that might end up being close to 70 total games if it goes as long as Texas wants it to go. But I just think that that's going to be something to follow, because Ford came off the bench and, you know, looked like a big-time hitter at this level. And you know, in his first situations as a Longhorn on the road, and Hibbler really struggled. So, you know, and Pierce didn't hesitate to start Ford in the second game of the series right away. I mean, Louisiana riding on the mound, I'm going to get a left-handed bat in the lineup, even if it meant a senior not starting the game. So that'll be something to watch. You know, Bryce Regan, a guy obviously that got a lot of attention leading up to the season because he's now the starting shortstop after David Hamilton's injury. And I thought that you saw some of his youth and his inexperience, but I also thought you saw a lot of his talent as well, both on offense and defense. You know, there were a couple times he kind of misplayed a ball in that first game early on that should have been an error. By the way, what is it with scorekeepers in the state of Louisiana? LSU's were horrific last year, and, you know, Louisiana's weren't as bad, but they are still really, really bad. I mean, there are some errors given on plays that should have been infield hits, and infield hits given on plays that should have been errors, and so on and so forth. But so Regan had a play that he that was probably an error in that first game that was an infield hit. But then he had some plays early on, later in that game, that were really, really tough plays that he made. And, you know, there was a moment also in that third game where Louisiana had a runner on second, ball hit deep in the hole. Regan should have just eaten a throw or pumped it and see if he can get that runner to in a rundown at second base. And he tried to make the throw, even though he had no chance at it at all. They actually ruled his play an error, which made absolutely no sense because the runner would have beat up the throw easily no matter what. And that's a play that he needed to eat that ball. He needed to eat that ball or pump it or try to get that guy in a rundown. But, you know, later in the game, he made a couple of nice defensive plays. He ended up making some things happen offensively. You know, he finished over his first 11 plate appearances, got on base at a, you know, on base percentage of .455 and batting average of .333. So I think that that was a positive weekend for him and something that Texas can feel good about, because he didn't look overmatched. The game didn't look too fast for him, both offensively and defensively. Yeah, there's some things that they'll talk about and they'll have to clean up. And that won't be the last time he makes some sort of mental error at shortstop. But I think Texas can feel good about what he showed this weekend, because he looked much improved from the guy that was, you know, thrown into the mix in the fall as a potential candidate at second, third, you know, when Hamilton was in the lineup at that time. So I think that that's something that's positive for Texas. In the end, the Longhorns used 13 different hitters and 13 different pitchers. I mean, they got a lot of guys in there, which I think was very important. But I also think that that's something that's going to continue. They really feel like their depth can be a strength, and they're going to search for the guys that generate the best results, and they're not going to be afraid to, you know, get more lefties in the lineup against a righty, or get more righties in the lineup against a lefty, or play the hot hand, you know, around the infield, or, use a bunch of pitchers to try to maximize their depth and their talent to best generate results and, prevent, certain young pitchers from being asked to do too much. So they used a lot of players this weekend, a trend that I like to see because I think that's what's in their best interest long term, but also a trend that I think is going to continue. As for some older guys, Ryan Reynolds had one of the stronger weekends offensively. David Pierce talked up the offseason that he had, both he and Austin Todd, and the way they went about their rehab and stuff like that. But he specifically mentioned Reynolds' different sort of mental approach to baseball now. And he hit the first homer of the season. He had a strong weekend, both offensively and defensively. I think that's something that Texas can be very, very encouraged about. On the other side of that, I mentioned Mason Hibler earlier, but Tate Shaw, he had the strikeout as a pinch hitter to end the game on Sunday. He struck out in every at bat he had over the weekend. He had three at bats and he struck out three times. I know Pierce really likes the competitiveness he brings, the experience being a fifth year guy, that hard nosed approach, his athleticism, which can profile all over the place. But I don't know if continuing to try to force him into the lineup at first base is something that's going to work out best for Texas, especially as DJ Petrinski, who didn't catch at all, Michael McCann caught the entire weekend, especially as Petrinski's bat needs to be in the lineup somewhere. I just don't know if trying to force Tate Shaw in there is the answer, especially when Austin Todd's killing the ball in right field. Duke Ellis was really, really good on offense and defense in center field, and Eric Kennedy looks like a future star offensively. There's just not any innings in the outfield, and I think that Texas has some better options at first base, Dan Shaw. But, we'll see. I mean, these sorts of things work their way out throughout the season. I mean, at this point last season, none of us would have expected that Jake McKenzie would end up being a key contributor at first base for Texas and, kind of the key to their puzzle. If for whatever reason, their winning percentage went way up when Jake McKenzie became the first baseman. So overall, a positive opening weekend for Texas. Anytime you can go on the road and against a quality opponent and win a series, that's a big deal. When it comes time for the NCAA committee or the selection committee to unveil the field for the NCAA tournament, eventually the College World Series, road series wins are what they look at. And road series wins over quality teams are a big deal. They're a big deal in RPI. They're a big deal to the committee. That's really how they track teams is, do you handle your business enough in the midweek from the sense of you don't lose many games to just far inferior opponents that have bad RPI ratings? Do you kind of handle your business in that regard? But most importantly, where do you finish in your conference and do you have series wins? What kind of quality series wins do you have? And when it comes time for the seeding process and the NCAA tournament field to be unveiled, this is the type of thing that'll look positively for Texas. This is a road series win over a team that's going to potentially win its league and be in the NCAA tournament. So that's a positive result for Texas, especially when you consider how many guys got their first moments in a Texas uniform out of the way. And how many of those guys also experienced some success too? I mean, think about how many young players we mentioned in this podcast already in a positive way. Regan, Ford, Kennedy, Bryant, Cole Quintanilla, redshirt freshman. Bryce Elder's just a sophomore still. hasn't thrown a ton of innings. You go down the list with some of these guys that got in there. I mean, Owen Meany, I think he only threw 2/3 of an inning, but he didn't give up a run. I mean, that's a check off the box for a scoreless appearance in your first appearance as a Texas Longhorn. I mean, that's a positive, for a young pitcher. So a guy like Ivy, barely any experience at all. He's on the mound as, in a key situation as a left-handed specialist, with the bases loaded in the tie game in the bottom of the ninth inning at Louisiana Lafayette. And yeah, the guy hit the ball kind of well, but it went right at somebody. That's, he ends up getting the win. So a lot of these young players not only got that first experience out of the way, but they also got some positive results to feel good about as well. And I think the Texas coaching staff got a lot of valuable information as they move forward a week that's going to include five games. Texas is set to play at Rice tomorrow night. I do wonder if they get that game in. I have to admit, like Mike Trout, I am a big weather nerd. I do check the weather a lot. Weather Underground, Weather Channel app, you name it. If it's a weather app, it's cool. I probably have it on my phone and look at it. But it looks like a ton of rain is expected in Houston throughout tomorrow. So I wonder if they're going to get that game in. I'm sure they'll try to if they can. But four games this weekend against Purdue at home, Friday game, doubleheader on Saturday, and then Sunday. And then you've got two midweek games the following week at home for Texas before they get to a big weekend series against LSU, who I believe is still number two in a lot of the polls. So, man, March is almost here. That series is the first weekend of March. I feel like February just started, and it's already flying by, you know, just when you got baseball going on. And for me, it's baseball, basketball, and recruiting events all at the same time on campus and sometimes off campus as well. So, yeah, it's coming up. I mean, just think of how many games Texas is going to play over the next, 2 weeks? It's a ton of baseball. It's going to fly by, but we're going to have so much information about this team, especially after that LSU series. I think we'll really have a good feel of how the lineup's going to take shape, you know, what the pitching staff's going to look like, and so on. So Texas scheduled to play in Houston on Tuesday against Rice, a Rice team that put up some really gaudy numbers against I believe they played Rhode Island this weekend. And then four games at home against Purdue. Purdue team that was one of the best teams in the Big Ten last year. A team that could potentially make another run at the NCAA tournament. So that they'll be far from a pushover, which, I mean, pretty much everybody on the Texas schedule is definitely far from a pushover. So baseball is here. I hope you're as excited as I am. I think Texas had a strong start to the 2019 season. Definitely a lot of room for growth, but also definitely some positive signs and some takeaways from what ended up being a successful weekend for the Longhorns on the road in Lafayette, Louisiana against Louisiana. So next time I will talk to you, we'll have more baseball to talk about. But in the meantime, thank you for listening. Thank you for surviving the offseason with me. Thank you for continuing to tune in to the yak.com/Austin for all of our great podcast content. I hope that you make this year home for Texas baseball and college baseball discussion, and really just baseball in general. I mean, spring training is about to get fired up and going as well. So I feel like we'll have podcast after podcast after podcast with plenty to talk about baseball now that it's here. And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Extra Bases Podcast, episode 27. Is done. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. Make sure you're following me on Twitter for all of our Texas baseball coverage at DMcComasOB on Twitter. Feel free to comment. Feel free to email. But please do continue to listen, and all feedback is appreciated. If there's something you'd like on the podcast, or there's something you like but don't like, or something like that, feel free to reach out and find me on Twitter. My email address is on my Twitter page as well, and reach out. And help me entertain you and help me cover the 2019 college baseball season. So until then, take care. Thank you again for listening, and have a great week.